Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Catherine Beyer, and I represent the petitioner Roy Smith in this appeal. This is a case where Mr. Smith's attorney simply refused to participate in any meaningful way in Mr. Smith's defense. This is a clear Sixth Amendment violation under the Supreme Court's precedent in United States v. Cronic. In fact, the Indiana Court of Appeals has already effectively found as much when it stated, and I quote, Mr. Cupp did not for all practical purposes mount a defense on Smith's behalf. The Indiana Court of Appeals further stated, we cannot characterize defense counsel, that's Mr. Cupp's, representation as effective. Despite this finding, however, the Indiana Court of Appeals still affirmed Mr. Smith's conviction, even though it was obtained in violation of the Sixth Amendment and Cronic. In Cronic, the Supreme Court explained that there's a Sixth Amendment violation when counsel entirely fails to subject the prosecution's case to meaningful adversarial testing. That's exactly what has happened here.
So would that be true any time a court finds that the representation was ineffective, that is, that there's prejudice?
Well, I think there are two answers to that question, Your Honor. When the Court of Appeals found that the representation was not effective, I believe it found that there was a violation of the Sixth Amendment, which guarantees the right to not just counsel, but to effective counsel. And the Supreme Court has set forth various tests in Cronic, in Strickland, in some other cases as well, for to help the courts determine whether counsel has been effective. But once there's a determination that counsel was not effective, there's a violation of the Sixth Amendment. But I think the second part of my answer to that question is when the Court of Appeals found that Mr. Cupp didn't do anything to help Mr. Smith. He didn't mount a defense on Mr. Smith's behalf. That is a violation of Cronic. That's a failure to subject the case to meaningful adversarial testing.
Well, what's the line?
The line on
between Cronic and Strickland.
That's a very good
question. Express it in words.
So I think this court actually I think considered where that line is drawn in its Barrow decision, and in Barrow, counsel did a lot. There were extensive conversations with his client before trial about potential defenses.
Now, I'm asking you, what is the formula? What is the verbal formula for distinguishing between the two types of situation?
Yes, Your Honor. So in Strickland, Strickland applies to cases where there are isolated failures, is the language that's used. There is perhaps a counsel doesn't do a good cross-examination or makes one or two three isolated mistakes. In Cronic,
there's nothing in the ineffective assistance jurisprudence about isolated mistakes.
Your Honor, I believe
usually in ineffective assistance cases there are multiple mistakes by the lawyer.
Yes, and those are
just one little slip.
And in those cases when there are multiple, like, individualized mistakes, and I believe the Strickland court used the word isolated, but
isolated is not an accurate description of the Strickland cases we see constantly.
Yes, Your Honor.
There are invariably many mistakes made by the lawyer. I mean, it depends partly how you define a mistake, whether he interviewed nobody or what. Right?
And in Cronic, the difference with Cronic is that that's when there is...
Well, a typical Strickland mistake is the defendant's lawyer failed to interview any of the witnesses suggested to him by his client. That's typical. But nevertheless, there is a prejudice requirement.
Yes. And then,
so what's the line between cases like that and this case?
In this case, Mr. Smith's counsel didn't do anything.
Well, that isn't true.
He didn't do anything on Smith's behalf. He didn't do anything.
He argued or opened with a reference to self-defense.
He did.
He cross-examined the victim.
He did.
Maybe not very well, but alluding to this self-defense. It didn't go anywhere. He objected to an exhibit.
And
he did some things.
He did some things, but I think what we have to do is look at the substance of what he did when he was doing those things. When in his opening statement, he eased the burden of proof for the prosecution. He admitted that his client stabbed the victim.
That's what self-defense is.
Yes, and then but then he
self-defense implies that you have caused harm.
I think that the problem with that is that he never followed up. He never attempted to establish any element.
Well,
I
think his most serious omission was his failure to give a closing argument.
Yes, Your Honor.
Now, what would you have said in the closing argument if you'd been Smith's lawyer?
Well, I would hope that I would have had been able to draw out some evidence from the witnesses, and which Mr.
No, assuming you didn't.
I think that there were.
Then what do you say?
I think that there were a number of inconsistencies in the testimony of the witnesses. We set forth those in our brief, but
okay. So what would you have said in your closing argument?
I think that the state had failed to prove its case beyond a shadow of a doubt, that there was inconsistent testimony on. Where the scissors were located after the alleged attack. There is no testimony that...
Does it make a difference that it's a bench trial? Closing arguments must be much less important in a bench trial than a jury trial.
Your Honor, I was considering that.
What if the lawyer said to himself, this is a bench trial, it's a very short trial, very simple facts. You know, the judge knows everything he knows to make a decision. Nothing I can say.
And I was considering that very question, Your Honor. And I think
this is the county in which Michigan City Prison is located, isn't it? So this judge probably hears a lot of prison.
I believe that's right, but I don't know that for sure, Your Honor. But I think that even though it's a bench trial, when Mr. Smith waived his right to a jury trial, he didn't waive his right to have an advocate on his behalf. He still has that Sixth Amendment right.
What could he possibly have said, or what could a witness? How could self-defense? What was he defending? I mean, I know he had bad blood with Fisher, the victim.
Yes.
But what? How could stabbing him all these times with the scissors, how is that self-defense against what? You're not allowed to defend yourself against just someone who's obnoxious or even if he's threatened you. You can't go stabbing a person just because the person has made threats.
Especially
in a prison, you complain to the guard.
I agree completely, Your Honor. I think that there was no viable self-defense defense.
So what's the point? You want to have another trial with a lawyer, but we know what the outcome is going to be.
Your Honor, I would suggest that we don't.
I mean, in a way, as you say, kind of standard Strickland error, failing to question witnesses, that's serious. That can make a difference. What could make a difference here?
I think that failure to question the witnesses, to draw out what the inconsistencies on.
But what? The guards saw him. The guards saw him, saw the scissors lying on the floor. And so, there's no suggestion, is there, that someone else may have stabbed Fisher?
And we just don't know because...
What do you mean we don't know?
Mr. Smith's attorney did not do any
well,
sort
what's
of
he
that
supposed
investigation.
To do? The guards saw it.
And the other half of the scissors is found in his pocket.
That's correct, but no one ever saw the other half, the other half of the scissors.
Maybe
in his
if he
hand.
Had a camera attached, if the guard had the camera attached to his shirt, to video.
It occurred at breakfast time. You know, it's entirely conceivable that there were a number of other potential witnesses, none of whom we know what they saw, what they didn't see. It's a prison environment. Again, very likely that there is some video evidence. We don't have any of that because Mr. Cupp didn't.
But wait a minute. You said this was self-defense. Now you're raising a question whether he was actually the person who stabbed Fisher.
I think, Your Honor, Mr. Cupp presented the self-defense defense to Mr. Smith's complete surprise. They had had no discussions whatsoever about that. I would have taken a different tack.
So you wouldn't argue self-defense. You'd argue someone else did it.
Or that there was a failure to prove beyond a reasonable doubt. Yes, Your Honor.
Didn't Smith have some of the blood on his hand or arm or something?
I don't believe there's any of that evidence in the record. There was a blood splatter on the floor, but I don't believe there was anything found on him that we have in the record, Your Honor.
And how many times did he stab Fisher? 13? Or did someone stab Fisher 13 times, was it?
It was a number, but I don't know the exact, but it was more than once.
So you think that the judge might have been convinced that someone else had stabbed him 13 times?
Well, I think that Mr. Smith does not need to prove that someone else stabbed him 13 times. I think Mr. Smith just had to, or his attorney had to do enough to shed some reasonable doubt.
But there was evidence that Smith stabbed, without an alternative suspected assailant. How could he get to first base?
The issue with that, Your Honor, is that we don't know if there was an alternative assailant because Mr. Cupp never did any of that investigation. So the record is incomplete on that fact, but it's because of Mr. Cupp's incomplete investigation.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Mr. Toby?
May it please the Court. The Indiana State Courts properly decided the explicit claim presented to it. Now in this appeal, Mr. Smith raises for the first time a chronic claim. This claim is not available for review due to waiver and procedural default. The Indiana courts properly determined that Strickland was the correct standard to apply to this case because the attorney in this case did many things on Mr. Smith's behalf. And now Mr. Smith is arguing that some of those things were done.
Well, many things seems an exaggeration.
Well, there is, contrary to Mr. Smith's claim, there's absolutely no evidence that the attorney did no investigation. And in fact, based on the little we have in the record here, one of the things that Mr. Smith attached to, it happened to be a status report in the district court, is two pages from the internal affairs investigation of the prison in which Smith gave his version of events. And his version of events of what happened in the dining hall is right in line with the way counsel questioned the victim. He, in fact, used the exact same words that the night before Mr. Fisher had said, "You have defied me for the last time," and that in the recreation yard the next evening, "I'm going to get you." And those were the exact questions that the attorney asked of Fisher, which indicates that the attorney had looked into the discovery, had looked into the defendant's version of events, and was questioning the victim along those lines. This was a very short bench trial. Many of the witnesses were, well, at least two of the witnesses were just foundation witnesses. One, the nurse to admit the medical records. The other one was the officer who took pictures of the dining hall. So there wasn't much that could be done in the way of cross-examination of those witnesses because they were basically foundation witnesses for getting exhibits in. The attorney here questioned the one witness who could have helped him. Now, self-defense, as Your Honor has pointed out, was not the best defense here, but it was a defense. And the attorney tried it. It didn't turn out, but really there wasn't any
other...
It seemed
like he gave up after the victim.
Well, the victim was
virtually
very...
nothing else, including... You can't really call that a final argument, can you?
No, but if you look at the state's closing argument, it was very short as well, just saying that it had met the elements, didn't argue much beyond that. And so counsel got up and said, "We will leave it to the court to determine whether the state has met its elements."
I suppose that cut off a rebuttal argument. There was nothing to rebuttal.
Correct, and the state didn't do any rebuttal argument. I would point out on the identification, too, not only did the guard grab Mr. Smith's arm while he still had half a pair of scissors in it, his ID was found right underneath the confrontation in the blood. So there's absolutely no suggestion here that anybody else did it or that there was any other defense. And
was there blood on Smith?
I believe there was, but there wasn't. That was never tested to see whose blood it was, because I think it was obvious to those involved whose blood it was. The petitioner in this case, Mr. Smith, had the opportunity to present evidence about what counsel could have done, but he never took that opportunity. In fact, in state post-conviction, he declined to present any evidence from trial counsel or from any other investigation that could be done. So the reason this record is so sparse is because petitioner never litigated it, presented evidence on it.
Are you saying that the petitioner here has to mention chronic in order to have it treated as a chronic case?
I don't believe that the word chronic has to be used. But in a case such as this, where petitioner explicitly argues Strickland and explicitly argues he has to show prejudice and argues this is how I show my prejudice, he is not raising a chronic claim. So, and even in an appeal from to the Indiana Supreme Court in his petition to transfer, he didn't argue that he didn't have to show prejudice. He just argued that the Indiana Court of Appeals got the prejudice component wrong. So throughout the proceedings, he's argued Strickland, both prongs, deficient performance and prejudice. And even before the district court, he didn't argue that the state courts were wrong in analyzing it as a Strickland claim rather than a chronic claim. The first time that argument is ever made is in this appeal. And so not only is it procedurally defaulted for failure to fairly present it to the state courts, it's waived for failing to present it to the district court. If there are no further questions, we'd ask that you affirm the denial of habeas relief. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Colby. Ms. Baird, do you have anything further?
Thank you, Your Honors. Just very briefly, on the issue of procedural default and waiver, the key test is whether the claim has been fairly presented to the courts below. And as we set forth in our brief, it has been repeatedly presented. And in fact, this court had no trouble at all recognizing a claim under chronic when it issued its certificate of appealability. And it was correct. Mr. Smith's attorney did
fail. How were the Indiana courts to know that it was a chronic claim instead of a Strickland claim?
Your Honor, as an initial matter, I believe that there is no distinction between a Strickland claim and a chronic claim. They're both Sixth Amendment ineffective assistance.
Right, but prejudice has to be shown under a Strickland claim.
Correct, and under chronic, prejudice is presumed because
So how is an Indiana court to know the difference?
Your Honor, I believe that when Mr. Smith cited to the Sixth Amendment, when he cited to various state cases that go through that same constitutional analysis.
So this kind of comes back to my first question. Isn't that true in all ineffective assistance cases?
Your Honor, I believe it's different. The Strickland and chronic ineffective assistance cases go to kind of the failures of the attorney at trial and whether it's a failure to investigate or a failure to cross-examine a witness under Strickland or whether it's a total failure under chronic. Those are kind of there's a problem with the way counsel approaches the representation. Under perhaps a Collier claim, an ineffective assistance Collier claim, there's a structural defect there. So we would not be saying that just saying Sixth Amendment gets you, you know, chronic Strickland and also Collier. But chronic and Strickland.
I don't understand the presumption of prejudice. Why would you presume prejudice from the fact that a person wasn't have a lawyer at all, and he wasn't representing himself? He just had nothing. But it was absolutely open and shut. So why wouldn't the presumption of prejudice have been rebutted in that case?
In this case or in the
any,
case?
Any case.
In the Supreme Court in Strickland and as clarified in Cronic, found that in such cases as when there is no attorney present or when the attorney fails to subject to meaningful adversarial testing, as in our case here, and there was a third category that I apologize, I just don't remember, that the you can presume prejudice because there is...
Can you rebut the presumption?
I do not believe so. I think because the...
Why can't presumptions be rebutted?
I believe in this case the way the courts have framed it is that you presume prejudice because the error is so bad that there had to have been
No, there didn't have to be prejudice. If the best lawyer in the country couldn't have gotten Smith off, then there's no prejudice, right?
But if the best lawyer in the country doesn't do anything on Smith's behalf, doesn't...
No, that's not what I'm saying. Suppose the best lawyer in the country, who would have exerted all his efforts, all his rhetoric, and all his investigative skills, would not have made any difference in the result, right? Why wouldn't that rebut any presumption of prejudice?
In such a case, Your Honor, I believe that the presumption would not attach in that instance. If
you don't think that would be a structural error where it's just sort of a mock trial if the person has no representation?
If the person has no representation, then there is a
potted plant next to it, basically. That would never pass muster.
That's correct.
That would be a structural error.
It's a Sixth Amendment violation. I don't know if it would be. It's a Sixth Amendment violation under Strickland, under Cronic, under probably any number of...
Not under Strickland. Why under Strickland? The potted plant is not a Strickland violation if there's no prejudice.
In Strickland, the court set forth the three times where they will presume prejudice, and then it expanded on those in Cronic.
Well, I don't understand why the presumption isn't rebuttable.
And, Your Honor, I have not seen any case law that has shown that it is rebuttable. It's the presumption.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much. And were you appointed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yes, well, we thank you for your efforts on behalf of your client. And